Welcome. This is Why Life Is. I'm Niles McFlower. Tonight, we have a very interesting show, again, dealing with metaphysics and spirituality, and especially tonight, life and God. For tonight's show is For Love of Life and God. And actually, this show has more technical meaning than it may sound like, as the title may imply. And it's going to be about the changes that take place, particularly in human beings, as they develop their consciousness and move closer to loving life and God, and what that means over time, especially the differences which seem almost counterintuitive to some people towards the end of this journey of being human and becoming what I call superhuman. Some people call it masters or whatever. But the point is, you move out of the human kingdom, and love becomes a different thing. Life means something different, and God takes on new meaning as well. So that's what tonight's show is going to be about, and I think there's some surprises probably for a number of our listeners. And the good news is it will reveal to probably most of the listeners things that haven't been contemplated or thought about, and maybe have been misunderstood in the past, which, of course, that's assuming anything I say has credibility and you find to be correct in your life as you apply it in various ways and challenge whatever I say, etc. So let's start off with what I mean by love. And then we'll go to the rest of today's title. When we're discussing love, love is really the second part of the mind of God. It really comes together as not just a single thing of love. It involves consciousness and planning. And what a lot of people would say is the ability to join together what knowledge we have and apply it in ways that are unique and new and that help to bring about inclusiveness rather than, as most people think of it, as strictly a giving. Love does produce giving, but the love I'm talking about is love with wisdom in it. And therefore, the other things I described happen when someone has that kind of love, love of wisdom. Love that is somewhat separative and somewhat selfish may not be inclusive, at least not with a lot of other people or things. And it may also lack a number of the other characteristics, including planning and the ability, we'll say, to create in ways that shows an increase in consciousness, which means the ability to understand better the knowledge one has and be able to use that new understanding to create things beyond the level that people think of as normal or average or what most people do with the level of knowledge that they have. So it's really a way of saying that love becomes an instrument of the first part of God's mind, which is creation and purpose and will, choices. All of those things usually join together with love and produce what a lot of people call enlightenment or light. So it's a fascinating way of understanding the word love. And it is probably much wider than the average way that love is expressed or talked about. Now, for love of life, what is life? Well, if you've listened to the show, and some of you have for a while, or you've read things that I've written, life is the means of growth of our Creator or God. So, saying life, we could transfer that over to what my definition of life is and say love of growing more of our Creator. That's a big deal, for love of growing more of our Creator. Now, then it sounds redundant because you say for love of creating more of our creator and our creator. It's not, because love of growing more of our creator is a stage that people go into towards the end of their human development, and it becomes the hallmark of that point in life, point in actually incarnated life for human beings. But it is, it's different than love of God. Now, you could say, well, are you just splitting hairs here, or what do you mean? Well, that's what tonight's show is about, it really, to understand this in a much deeper way. But right now, as I usually do, I'm defining these things so that we have a common way of understanding what I'm talking about. Even if you might disagree, at least you have a way of knowing how I'm defining these things. And so love of God is really what we're talking about. For love of God, how do you love God if God is the creator? And this is a kind of strange thing. There's a part of a human being that allows us to love God. And, no life forms lower than human beings have this part in total, developed. And that is what is known as the heart chakra. And we have that in three different ways, represented through three different bodies of senses. And the love of God is gradually developed as the three bodies of senses are developed, and then those bodies are joined into one sense in each body, and eventually the love of God becomes joined through all three of the bodies, one sense, into one sense. So you don't have three different senses of God. You eventually have one sense of God that gives you love of God. And that sense provides something different than the sense does in those people who haven't joined it together or in lower life forms. The sense of understanding God develops first through things like conscience and a familiar and we'll call it a representation of a superior, familiar kind of love, and oftentimes paternalness, if you believe God is male, or the opposite, maternalist, if it's female, or both, if you think God is both. But it oftentimes relates to the parental element, so that it is in the beginning of human development, it is highly connected with family and with paternal aspects or the maternal aspects. And it has a totally, really different meaning than it does, say, after a person has gone through most of their incarnated lifetimes and have developed their consciousness, which again is the love part of them, to such a high level and have used this consciousness in such creative ways, they have enlightened their bodies and brought up a thing called chi energy into them, three kinds of chi energies, because it has an effect on one, each one has more of an effect on each of the three bodies. And the result, ultimately, as it intertwines and joins all the chakras together into an absolute one chakra, that one gets a totally different viewpoint of understanding God through the heart chakra. And that understanding is that God is something that is amazingly appreciated for greater than a human being can appreciate, greater than a human being can create virtue. And let me get to that part. We'll be talking about this more in a little while. But human beings' highest virtue is a thing called nobility. What is nobility? Nobility is doing the best that each human can do, that we can do, at any particular time. Now, that is not nowhere near the highest virtue that can be done. It's just the highest that a human being can do. humans are destined to create much higher levels of virtue. Even when they're semi-human, because they're almost at the end of being a human, they develop some level of virtue greater than nobility. And you say, well, wait a second. If doing the very best you possibly can is nobility, what could be more than that? As I said, we're going to talk about this more. But I'll throw this out, that if you create yourself into something more than you are, then you can do that. You can create yourself beyond your present level of being able to create virtue. And you create yourself to the level that is needed by life. Oh, wait a second. This sounds like something the show is about. So that as you help create more life that is able to appreciate God in some way, especially if it can eventually love God, which is a big deal for life that isn't human and less than human, then you are doing something that is outstanding, and the results can be profound in changing both life and your relationship with life and God. So all of this starts to take on a lot more complex meaning than the For Love of Life and God title may have originally implied, which is not unusual for the show. And it means something that I appreciate at this time. I'll tell you some personal things about me. I guess they're personal. They're really about me being non-personal, but most people would think of them in that way. And I'll tell you other things about others that go through a great deal of challenge about this show's title. It's a strange test of moving from humanity into what would be considered to be the next kingdom, but it's also a test, we'll say, that all of life participates in, and God, in creating the universe, actually chose for its, we'll say, own development. Because life is God's growth. And we're talking about the interrelationship of these two elements as far as love is concerned. Very strange, isn't it? I know I'm being a little cryptic. You know, hey, listen, you know, there's some art to this talking about this stuff, and instead of just saying a bunch of facts, I think I need to reweave the show tonight. And again, we only have 2 hours, which is the normal show length. That may sound like, well, gee, you can't do the 2 hours and 30 minutes, which would be technically 35 minutes longer in tonight's show. But I want to remind everybody that 2 hours, for a lot of people, of this magnitude of thought, is a test in itself, and 2.5 is pushing a lot of folks. But the good news is, and I say this to everybody who's listening or who will be listening, you can choose at any time to go back and re-listen to any part of any show if you don't completely get it. And you can listen to the whole thing over again as many times as you want. And because of that, you have a great advantage. This is not like you're sitting in a situation where you either got it or you lose it. It's the exact opposite. You get it, and you may not get parts of it, and then you can come back and try to figure it out. And then if that doesn't work, you can email me. You can read some of the material that's in some of the books I've written or some other sources. And you can listen to other shows. There's a whole bunch of things that, you know, I've done. And others have done as well in similar subjects. So there's a lot of ways to really gain a fuller understanding of any parts of these shows. And 2 hours is a lot of time to really cover any one of these subjects. Not because the subject can be fully covered in that time. In reality, I can't. Most of the time, I'm bridging everything. And I'm taking it to the point where sometimes I worry about that. But the point is that at some other time, in some other show, it might get explained better or simple, more fully. And in addition, again, the re-listening factor is in the back of my mind. And so I include that in this idea of how long and what we cover, et cetera. I noticed last week I was talking pretty fast and covered a lot of stuff in the 2.5 hours. And I think that some people would probably split that up into two shows if they wanted to just listen to it even, because it is just a lot of stuff. That's okay. I don't mind that. And whatever works for you, you go for it. All right, so now let's go back to tonight's show and let's talk about, let me talk about some of this and see if it is, if it makes sense to you and if I can present it in a way that will hopefully clear up some things. All right, let me start historically speaking. Human beings, for the first dozens of lifetimes, are predominantly, we'll call it, familiar-centric, meaning that most of their development of their lower self, which is where most of their development is focused, comes from their family interactions, and particularly from parental aspects. Their parents are the, we'll say, teachers, for the most part, of life and God, and then siblings and other family members, you know, like grandparents, uncles, aunts, and all that, et cetera. And then after maybe those lifetimes, and again, I'm talking about averages now. I'm not talking about any specific person. This is just like any average. Eventually, the incarnates of a soul start to find those who are like, we'll call them mundane level teachers. Teachers who aren't necessarily teaching spiritual things, so sometimes they are priests and that sort of thing. They do teach spiritual stuff. But they're still more mundane from the standpoint that they teach things that are written and explained to them and to those that they teach through a doctrine or a prior developed level of explanation. And this is the education part. So education becomes the next dominant element in the development itself. That's not to say education doesn't play a role, even from the very first incarnation. It just doesn't dominate the level of self-development during that period of time. That can lead all the way past 100, for an average person. 100 incarnations could be relied upon in the familiar and in what we would call formal and to some extent informal educational elements. Also, eventually friends beyond family, and eventually the development of interactive people past adulthood. That includes new families that are formed from partnering with others, and in addition, we'll call it extended new family kind of stuff. And all of that happens because people, by nature, want to partner with others and have additional family interactions. That does happen during the first few dozen lifetimes, but is not the significant formulator of self. But when you go past that first few dozen lifetimes, on an average, the development of self becomes much more focused on the new family structure developed through marriages and having children. And the rearing of children in particular becomes a dominant factor in the development of self. It's a only supportive developmental factor for people maybe during their first 25, 30, 35 lifetimes. And so this is a real strange way of looking at it because it means something entirely different. Love does, excuse me. It means something entirely different to the folks in these two categories I'm talking about if we're talking about love of life and God, they love the life in those circles where they're developing their lower self. Now, the higher self is also developing in small measure during these lifetimes. Conscience, particularly, is very dominant. Then it moves from conscience to what most people would call personal spiritual levels of giving. Now, those things can start really early, but they have really peripheral levels of development and are expressed infrequently during the person's life. Why is that? Because it's slow to develop beyond just the level of conscience in people who are relatively new incarnates from what most people call younger souls. And that is one of the reasons that the love of life in God doesn't enter in too much into the picture, because the higher self is the big part of tonight's show, not the lower self. And the higher self doesn't really take hold in people. A hold meaning that it is as important to them as their lower self until after, on an average, 300 plus lifetimes. That's a long time after our 100th lifetime, where we were just talking about familiars and education. So something's happening between the 100th and the 300th. That is obviously a big deal, but it is different than what I've already talked about. And what's happening is the heart chakra starts to open more and become more conscious in one of three bodies to begin with. That usually starts sometime around 100 lifetimes. You can go to 100, 150, and sometimes even up to 200. And it happens in the physical realm, physical body the most. At this particular junction, people become willing to listen to their soul through their solar angel and develop what is known as vortexes beyond the one of conscience. So it isn't really a matter of whether they're hurting somebody or doing something that's dark or evil. It gets into doing something proactively good. But good more on a God level than good on a parental, like, just be good and don't talk when others are talking. No, we're not talking about that. We're talking about good in helping to create goodness in life, to make life a more beautiful thing and make life a more cooperative part of one's life, a more loving in the wider sense, universally, in one's life, and to make it more consistently true and wise and purposeful. All of these things become a part of a person in after about 100 lifetimes or so, and it is first recognized in a physical way. It is truly much more in a physical way that people begin to give in these ways. They sometimes don't just give the charity, that could happen earlier, but they may form a charity or become active in one. They may see charity on the physical level as keeping people from starving or keeping them well or helping them in some way to communicate or travel or just be able to live in a way which is more comfortable but at the same time productive in a way that helps everyone else. This is the kind of thing that people start really focusing their attention on. And it means that the heart chakra, at least the physical body, is starting to open, become more conscious. But there's more to it than that. There's also the heart chakra in the astral body. And it opens a little bit later, maybe 50 lifetimes, maybe 20, maybe 40. But when it does open more, the person becomes much more concerned not only about the comfort and the food and what, they care about how people feel. And the feelings of others become a dominant element in terms of one's ability to empathize with them and to help others to become, to change their emotional or selfish feelings into more empathic feelings, where they become more conscious of others, usually other people. And so the dominance of these, and eventually becomes mental, more by like 200, 250 lifetimes, you see people becoming much more mental in their heart chakra opening, in their manasic or mental body. And when that takes place, they want to give truth to other people. They want to help other people to understand the truth about many things. They themselves may become teachers on various levels. They themselves may seek that others work together and help each other in doing the same thing, in finding truth, in expressing ideas, in being an asset in terms of everyone else's ideas. So this becomes a big part of it. And now we're talking about the heart chakra in consciousness, reaching into another, all four of the vortexes are starting to then open and spin and become, when I say open, they're communicating with the solar angel. And the person is doing an amazing job. Two of the vortexes are bringing in information to the solar angel, and then the person responds to it and sends information back to the solar angel. And it becomes what some people call a dialogue. Now, does that mean you actually hear the words? Some people claim they do, some others don't, but it doesn't matter. It seems to be an evolving kind of thing in the person, but it's not evolutionary. It's actually done by the person's own choices and creation. It's a true, we'll say, choice to become something much greater than what was the original person that we started with in the first few dozen lifetimes. At that point, we can start talking about the love of life. Before someone reaches all three of these levels, they don't really appreciate life in the way I'm going to be talking about tonight. And you might say, well, gee, what if I don't? Does that mean I haven't lived 300 lifetimes? No, not necessarily. You could live 500 lifetimes and you get screwed up and you lose some of it. You go off the path of development in a spiritual sense and maybe you become disordered or you become greedy or in some way negative. That all can happen. Or maybe if we have some really young souls listening who haven't gotten there. But maybe they can, and you don't. Anything I'm saying is just averages. People don't have to follow what I'm saying. They don't like someone standing at the gate and say, you can't go any further with your consciousness. You can't increase your heart chakra because you only have so many lifetimes. It's nothing like that. It's just the opposite, actually. It's open-ended. It's whatever we choose and are willing diligently to develop, and it requires discipline of ourselves. Discipline doesn't mean someone else is going to change it for us. It means that we limit our senses so we can improve them. And improving a sense does mean to open it to being more conscious rather than subconscious. Remember, a sense that is subconscious is under the control almost exclusively of the personality or the subconscious part of ourselves. Whereas a sense that is under, well, some conscious development is at least under our lower self. And if it becomes much more conscious, it becomes under the higher self's domain, and the lower self starts to fuse or become one with the higher self. That's part of our soul, which is really our solar angel, but the two are like one. We can think of them that way. Amazing stuff. Okay. So here we have some guidance then. After about 300 lifetimes, give or take, by a large amount, because it's an average, people start becoming responsive to loving life. And how is it that they do that? Well, there is a secret to it, and I'm going to explain it to you right now. This is the cool part of tonight's show. This is, it's sort of like we're going to get a structured way of developing this. just having the heart chakras open in each of the bodies is a big deal, but it doesn't solve the riddle of loving life. I'm not even going to get to God yet, but it doesn't solve the riddle of loving life in general. And the reason for that is that the chakras need to be balanced. And balance means that they sense life from the physical, astral, and mental, monastic, including conceptual monastic sides, about equally. And when they do that, then we really want to give in the most wise way to all life that we are aware of. But when we don't do that, we may become loving of some life, like people. We may love people. Say, oh, I really love people. But we may not love certain kinds of animals. We may decide to kill them wantonly or just kill them for food or eat them or whatever. Or maybe we don't love plants very much and we just, mow them down, maybe don't water them, don't do much to them. Maybe we don't love things that are barely aware of, but they're important nonetheless. What are those kinds of things? Well, in some cases, they may be bacteria, because the roots of trees need bacteria, most of them do, and some other plants, and if they don't get them, they can't absorb certain other kinds of nutrients from the soil. Isn't that weird? So we need to love the bacteria for that purpose and for the purpose of getting rid of carcasses and other things that die and become bad to us and from a negative side. So there's good bacteria that destroys them and bad bacteria that can infect them and then infect us. So we have all, and it may further stench and create all kinds of other problems. So I'm using the absurd bacteria idea. Because loving life eventually gets to those and beyond that level. You may eventually love viruses. Now you may say, oh, viruses are mostly hostile. Well, there are some that aren't, but for the most part, actually, that isn't too far off. They're hostile at least to other forms of life because they draw upon other forms of life for their life. And they truly are, invaders. For the most part, they're missing things that the other parts of life have that they take. But if you look at it from a different standpoint, they also accelerate certain types of evolution. They also sometimes created cells that were necessary in the very early parts of evolution. And so it's important to realize that they have a place. Now, we may not care for them because they affect our plants, animals, and ourselves, and they do sometimes some nasty stuff. But once you can appreciate and then eventually love them for the things they can do that are good, you find ways to help them to not be so destructive. I know it's hard to believe this, but the love of life allows us to change life from destructive to constructive, from a godlike kind of thing to a hostile, negative thing if it's going in the wrong direction, or if we become more loving in life, from something that's very negative and hostile to something that helps all other life, or most other lives to develop, and grows more of God. So really, almost anything out there could be included in this, maybe everything. It's really up to one's ability to be conscious, because everything can be turned around unless you're talking about the one major exception, and that is evil. Evil has a very strange, game plan, life plan, and that is to destroy life, and therefore destroy the growth of God. Because it doesn't like God, and it lets others think that God doesn't exist if it can convince them. And even if it can't convince them, it says that God's irrelevant, so then that's another way of looking at it. So it does this because it's threatened by God. It wants to be more powerful than God. Oh, my power is such a big thing. is part of, but it isn't the correct godlike part of the third part of God's mind. There's nothing wrong with having some levels of power, especially if you're dealing with evil. But the problem is that it isn't the true nature of God. It's the nature of God as it has been mostly turned around by lower forms of life, including human. All right, so evil becomes a part of life that we really can't love, and we don't need to. As a matter of fact, God created a system in which the love for life, love of life and of God does not have to include loving evil. It only needs to permit evil to exist in certain ways without therefore violating the tenet that God has, which is all life, even evil, which is part of life, has the right to exist and to create itself into what it chooses to be. Now, that's a weird thing, and it kind of throws the monkey wrench into tonight's show, because the love of life and God is exclusionary, for human beings at least, in terms of evil. And when you move beyond the human kingdom, the love of life and God allows evil to eventually destroy itself or to be destroyed by interactions on a level and in a dimension where destroying it is okay by human beings, but not by kingdoms beyond human. This is going to confuse you right now. I'm going to leave it there because we will cover it later in the show. But just for right now, I'm trying to bring in some of the contextual elements so that we can build our tapestry, so to speak, of how this whole thing works out. It is fascinating because it means that this one title has a much, much bigger meaning to a lot of life in general, not just human life. And so let me try to just touch on, we got about a minute or so, this idea of love of God, because human beings, in order to love God, not only have to, I know this sounds impossible, not only have to open up their heart chakras and become more understanding of God in the three bodies and balance those like they do with life, they have to open up all of the chakras, including the crown chakra, which deals with creating and creating with God, more of life, and therefore more of God. And doing so, balancing them, joining them together in each of the three bodies that we have, you know, and then joining those three bodies into one huge sense. That is how human beings eventually love God, but what I'm really talking about is you become able to love God as you leave the human kingdom and become a superhuman being. And again, we're going to cover more about that. So that's the amazing part of this whole thing, is that it's a big journey, and we're going to be on that journey for the rest of tonight's show. And we will go back to this, come back to it, in about 2.5 minutes, give or take, from right now.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's hidden meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hun, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. McFlower.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
Back. This is Why Life Is. I'm Niles McFlower. Tonight we're talking about for love of life and God. And it's a little more complicated than the title sounds like it is. Well, that doesn't surprise me. All right, so we were talking about the development of human beings early in the show. Let me continue with that model, if I might. So that it's a little more tangible to understand this process. Because like I said, I'm going to focus mostly on human beings because, after all, that's who's listening, I think. And so let me continue on that. After 300 lifetimes, people start opening the heart chakra in their three bodies to a substantial level, actually. Somewhere between 300 and 350 lifetimes, a lot of people have them open, but they don't have them balanced. So they still don't have a love of life itself. They love some parts of life sometimes, and contradictory parts, sometimes they do contradictory things to parts of life that is certainly not loving it. And that's a tough problem, because believe it or not, another whole 300 or so lifetimes could be spent in close to that process. Let's say up to 500 to 600 lifetimes. People could spend a good deal of their different lifetimes trying to develop a true love of life in the spiritual sense, where they balance all the different elements of life. Now, does that mean that you go out and save the whales? Well, maybe. But the problem with that is that you have to have the same love for people as you do for whales and birds and other fish that live and share the sea with whales. Even the plankton that the whales eat, that some eat, and the fish that some other kinds of whales may eat, and all kinds of things like that. So when you really look at this whole process, it's a complicated one, and it isn't as simple as it oftentimes is presented. Now, a number of people, during the period of time that they start to spiritually discipline themselves, that's a big jump, go through a process of trying to balance the love of life. It's usually called the first level of initiation. And the dozens of lifetimes are spent in this first level of initiation trying to establish some level of balance through spiritual discipline. There may have been a few lifetimes where the person didn't do a lot of spiritual discipline, but just because of the right circumstances, the right parents, the right circumstances in the environment and world at the time, they were able to gather some love of life and use their senses in a more balanced way because they didn't have the challenges of otherwise. But then all of a sudden the next lifetime comes by and the challenges pop up that weren't there before and they may not do as well. This is the problem. It's necessary to have a balance for love of life under the most derogatory and negative and hostile and sometimes bitterly destructive circumstances. And that's a tough one. As a matter of fact, that is the ultimate test for leaving the human kingdom, is to go through the most severe test possible and still have a love of life. But then you have the love of God, which follows the love of life. And that becomes even more tricky. Usually developed during the end of the first initiation, if on Earth, now we're talking about the process as it takes place in this world. And it continues on through the second and third initiations where people get into more complicated circumstances that require more discipline of the senses in the bodies. Instead of 10% of the time a person is being spiritually disciplined, they may have to be 50%. That's a huge, big difference, believe me. Really tough to deal with. And during those different periods, there's a tremendous model of experimentation going on. Each lifetime is only partly remembered, and not that frequently in the beginning. And so what is really happening is the person is opening the channels that are necessary with the solar angel, and the solar angel is becoming the dominant element until the very end when it just literally stops and the person has to be their own solar angel instead. But for most of it, the attempt here is that we become a living soul while we're here in the physical world. Souls are what give us the ability to love all of life in an equal and balanced way that allows life to prosper the most and grow the most, which means that we're helping the Creator to grow through us understanding the process. We may not be doing much of the real creative part of it until we get to the end of each initiation, when we become what is known as accepted. Some people do it a bit during the pledge stage, which is fine. But then the earlier stages of initiation, not so much. The creative part of us and creating more of God is not done so much during that period of time. That also means that we don't really create a lot more life, although we do love a lot of life, especially as we get better during the earlier initiations and we spiritually discipline ourselves and it gets the balance. But balance alone does not get us to the point where life just suddenly becomes more easily developed and it creates itself into an enlightened thing. To help it to enlighten life, which means make it more godlike and grow more of God, it requires that we be the creator as well. And not a teacher of the creation, but an actual creator. Big teachers, sometimes referred to because they usually are more advanced initiates, have to create the things that they teach. And they have to create a great deal more in the lifetimes that they're in. Little teachers create very little of what they teach. And they are oftentimes not that creative in their lives either. Sometimes there are a bit of creation in their life, but it's not applicable or they don't apply it to their teaching. And that makes them little teachers. Little teachers are good things. People can be little teachers of spiritual things, and that's a good thing. But they can't help to make life more creative, and they can't therefore be a co-creator with God in any significantly high level. They can be a co-creator at a very low level. And that's okay, because you got to start somewhere and you got to do somewhat, and it helps you to become a little bit more of your soul. It's usually a few percentiles maybe every few years or something, but it's not like a huge jump. The huge jumps happen when people become big teachers, or they at least become big creators. Sometimes they become a leader of a national or world service group, and then in those cases, they actually can, just through the leadership, but usually there'll be a big teacher president in these situations. Sometimes they're missing, and that's when the leaders don't really develop as fast. But if there's the big teacher president and you got a leader in one of those kinds of groups, you get some really, really improvement, great improvement in those folks in their creative abilities. They may start off not being that creative, just like there are other folks. But the forces that may, in order to lead, usually requires that eventually they become strong co-creators. And that's a good thing. So when we look at this whole message of loving of life, and if we're talking about the enlightenment of loving of life and bringing it to a much higher level of creation itself, then we need to do this by being creators, not by just saying, "Oh, I'll follow whatever this guy says on the radio and that'll be enough." Well, I'm not telling you how to do it because I can't. I mean, you know, this is the creative part. And it also means that you can't really be significantly co-creating with God, and therefore you can't love God until you are a significant co-creator. Now, how much is the word significant? Because, you know, I really don't want a definition. You know. Okay, well, there is a way to define this. It's not a simple thing like I'm going to just write a number because that won't work. That in order to love God, we need to be using our senses in all three bodies, okay, at a very high rate. So what you create requires high levels of mental whole thought that are concepts that are very wise and wisely used, combined with creative imagination and we'll call it high levels of super empathy. What is super empathy? Super empathy is where you not only understand how other people feel, which is like empathy, that's good, but you understand how you can help other people to become feeling of God. You can help them to feel the spirit within them, we'll say. That's a very big deal. It's a huge difference. And then you need to be able to help people to cooperate and share. And others, parts of life, cooperate and share. And sometimes you have to help life cooperate and share in unique ways that's new, because the life itself is doing things that are random, and the group souls of that life are not necessarily informed enough to be able to deal with the complexities of a world that's somewhat being polluted and changed by human beings and whatever. And so you've got to really come up with a fairly complicated process that may solve the problem. And when you do all that, if you're using your senses in that way at one time, now you got the ticket. That's how you co-create with God. Yeah, that's it. So I did explain it, but there's no, like, well, do these four things and jump up and down four times and you do this. No, it doesn't work. It's recreation is the part of any explanation that requires the person being taught to truly participate. Not just sit there like a bump on the log and say, well, I'll write down whatever you say and then I'll follow it. It won't make any difference. You can write all the time and it's not going to work until you actually do the creation. That's it. All right. So hopefully this is starting to gel. It's starting to, I'm hoping people are going, hey, this is starting to make some sense to me. I'm finally starting to understand what this whole thing is about. Well, that's what tonight's show is about. Yes. To understand what it's all about. Yeah. Okay. All right. So I gave some examples here, and we can see how, within a historical perspective, if we were to follow this whole thing from the beginning, the first few lifetimes of incarnate of a young new soul when young new souls may come from other planets where they've done a lot of incarnating before, but coming here is a whole different thing. This is like, you start from the beginning, believe me, it's like a different world than most other worlds. And this is the strangest, maybe, or one of the strangest. Alright, so you got all this, you're looking at maybe 600 to 800 lifetimes. That's the range, approximately. And that with the average, I know the 777. I've read it about four or five different books. Even the one I wrote, I put it in there. But I said, well, look, this is a number that somebody likes. Sevens, okay, seven sounds good, but it's really it's more made up than real. And so, yeah, 600 to 700 is okay. 600 to 800 is okay. You know, those are good. Those are fine. You know, it's a wide range of number of lifetimes that people incarnate. Each one is special for them, and they're getting and doing certain things. And this helps us to understand that process better, doesn't it? It gives us better, because a lot of times people ask you, well, why should I come back 50 more times? What am I going to get out of it? Well, they need to listen to tonight's show. It might make sense to them a little bit, anyway. All right, so the other part of this process is that there's the dark side, evil. And people need to find what evil is by not just experiencing it from others, but also dealing with it within themselves. Because evil is in some ways competition with life and God. It comes from usually a rejection of God because God doesn't seem to be loving. Now, this is the most complicated and most problematic part of tonight's show. You see, in order to get to the point where someone understands and loves, therefore, God, you got to go through this confusing stage where it seems like God is either goofy or doesn't exist or has some strange, weird traits, because after all, some very terrible things happen to what appears to be some pretty good people. Sometimes some very good people. Sometimes people we love and cherish and care about. And when those things happen to a lot of people, now I've talked about this before, but I think it's really relevant tonight, people may say, what the heck do I need a God for in my life who just wiped out my whole family? Or my friends, or all these other good people that I know of, even if, you know, they're not familiar, or maybe some people that died in my family I don't care that much about, but the loved ones I do, and so it becomes that kind of thing. And eventually, the question is asked, well, if there is a God, is this the God that I want to love? And when the answer comes back, no, you're on the path to evil. Now, it's not that you're all instantly, you're going to go out and become an evil dude. No, it's a very, very subtle process, oftentimes more than one lifetime. And it requires a lot of, quote, negative interactions, dark kinds of behaviors that leads eventually to this kind of nihilistic attitude about God itself. Like, it doesn't matter if God exists, because who wants a God like that? And the rejection of God in place of the love of God leads one into the dark side. All right, so, and this happens, strangely, not to the folks very often that are in the first 100 first 100 lifetimes. It usually happens after the 300. Go figure. So people that are dark are like newbies that just, you know, are, well, they just don't understand, so they're going to be going around doing bad stuff. No. The evil ones are usually the ones who have had a significant number of lifetimes and usually are fairly intelligent, have a lot of good things in terms of sense to begin with, and are able to be somewhat, if not significantly, creative, if not, unfortunately, destructive equally as much. And so the strange thing about this is that the people that turn evil are not the folks that most people, at least that I've talked to, think are evil. They don't know that the real evil folks are usually people that are in powerful positions where they have had a significant level of intellectual development, education, a significant amount of money and power. A lot of money is a conversion into power and back and forth in some areas of life. And so you get all of this. They aren't the folks we think they are. The people we may respect, they may win all kinds of prizes, Nobel Prizes. They may be great whatever, and they may be evil, or on the road to it, either way. And all because of this part that I'm talking about, where God gets the boot, because there's a misunderstanding, a lack of love. Same word. Understanding and love, you can exchange them. Remember I talked about this at the beginning of the show, and I've talked about it countless times on other shows. There's a misunderstanding, a lack of love of God. And once you get into that, you're in big trouble. Now, here's the problem, and I'm going to pose it to people. Some people are going to not like what I'm going to explain now, but it's got to be told. The love of life comes from pure understanding and wise giving. You can love life just from that. But the love of God requires co-creation. It means that you've got to get off your duff and be creative. If you don't do it, you will eventually become evil. And the more you develop yourself, and even if you spiritually discipline yourself, if you refuse to be creative, your path will lead to evil. Now, I know that that is a terrible thing for me to be saying right now, because there's a lot of folks out there that are going to not like what I'm telling them. And creation requires what I said earlier. It is a profoundly different path than what most people are comfortable doing. It's a state of uncomfortability, because it's such a word. Because there is a requirement within it that people leave themselves open to failure and mistakes on a daily basis, if not an hourly and even less than that, because creation always is outside of the box. You are creating yourself. You're going beyond the nobility. It's the process that brings you closer to God. It's the part that creates you closer to God, so you can then more fully understand God, because you're participating. And then you start to see the real truth about God. But not until you do enough of it, and it has to be balanced. If you don't balance it with all of the chakras that I talked about, especially the heart ones, you're going to create a nightmare. Now, it may not happen in one lifetime. It might take two or three, but eventually it's going to be bad news. And it's the main reason that spiritual disciples fail, and most, if not virtually all, evil people, the real ones, the real evil people, were at one point spiritual disciples, and then a lot of them were at or beyond the advanced stage of spiritual disciples when they went evil. Wow. Okay, like I said, nobody's going to appreciate hearing that, right? Okay, so here, we've got this thing, looking at it from I'll call it logic, but it's not really logic, it's beyond logic, and it has to do with that God is a being of pure creation beyond just love. I realize that religions focus on the love thing so much, especially Christianity, but it's more than just that one religion. And it pushes the love side with the creation being left out, because the creation exposes the failures of the religion itself to be creative. And the failure, the religion leaves it out also because they lose control of their people that are in it. Because if everybody's creative, they aren't going to be all following, like little soldiers, all of the dictates of the religion. And some of them are going to say, that doesn't make sense, And so this religion will have to continually change and grow, and religions aren't comfortable with that. They are a six-ray kind of thing, and they like to be narrowly construed and only to be done on this basis, that basis, and this way and that way. And it isn't their neck, but they need to be that way in order to survive for long periods of time, especially if in a world of today, the more modern world. For longer periods of time in the past, because human beings weren't that creative, even under the best of circumstances, religions could last a lot longer. Today they suffer from this onus of not being creative and not promoting creativity within the people that are in their religion. All right, so we've got this stuff, and we have a lot of what we'll call brainwashing going on. And then you end up with what is called progressivism, as we call it here in this country and other places. What is progressivism? Progressivism really is the adaptation of humanism to replace religion. It's a second-rate approach, we'll educate everybody. And if you want to be religious, you can, but make sure you keep it in the closet. But we really prefer that people not be religious. Even if you believe in God, don't be religious. Uh-oh. Here's where the problem gets into it. A progressive person, whether they're socially progressive, politically progressive, or there's a few other ways, the bottom line is that the superior element is the mind of the human as the God of everything. And God is, if it exists to some of the progressives, it is in only a comforting sense of paternalism, taking it all the way back in time, effectively to earlier incarnations, and allowed to sit there because it comforts them, because they still don't have an explanation for the true meaning of life, since they don't believe there's usually life after death. Because if there were, then you'd have to go into the explanations of why, and eventually you'd reach God. At least something about God. And so they usually believe, well, when you die, it's just the lights off and that's it, and there's nothing else. And those people who have those other experiences, they're really seeing photons in their eyeballs or something. And it's exciting certain parts of their brain as they die. And then they make up all kinds of visions and things. And who knows? It's just part of the brain thing going on. Okay. Progressives use science as a means of sidestepping the anomalous issues of life itself that are uncomfortable for them. And they provide the idea of second-rate education, but not on a spiritual level. They love, but only on a personal level, I shouldn't say only, but mostly on a personal level, and they never get to the higher parts of the spiritual mind that really do understand some elements of God. Now, we're going to get to that later in the show, assuming we can have enough time to do that, but for right now, I'm dealing with the basics of this thing. And so we have about 15% here in the United States of people that fall into this category. Most of them declare themselves to either be atheistic or significantly agnostic. It's about 15%. And it's dominated by people who are relatively well-educated and sometimes quite, as we measure it, intelligent. But not truly intelligent, but it's the kind of intelligence that people think of as being intelligent. And so this is the problem, because they become targets for the dark side. Our people love people who are progressives because they are on the verge. And it doesn't take much. Usually it'll take one or two really bad things that to them suggest there couldn't even be a God. And if there was, why should I be concerned about it? Because this God is doing terrible things to everybody. Look at all the people getting killed. Thousands of people are dying in Egypt right now as we speak, and all this other stuff. So, and way more than that in other places we've never heard of, well, we don't think about. So when you look at it all from the process, it seems to be that this is a reasonable way of explaining things through humanism. And I believe that humanistic ways of examining life, it has its own place, and it should not be thrown out. Now, I know certain religions believe that. All get rid of humanism, and since they're obviously getting rid of God. Humanism, by nature, does not have to destroy God. It just means it explains what it can be explained, that humans do for themselves and take part in themselves as that part of human's own creation. That's okay. Why not use humanism in that respect? But then when you get to the big ticket thing, how does a human being create more of life and then more of God and more life that is enlightened? That process cannot be explained through humans. Can't do it. Nope, you can't send anybody to any schools that are going to solve that problem. As a matter of fact, if you only teach humanism in school, you end up going in the wrong direction. It's okay to teach it, but you need to have a balance about talking about how there might be God and spirit and how that would fit in and why, and how you can put it all together and it isn't even mutually exclusive. All right. The other thing I want to mention is that progressivism and beyond, socialism, communism, some other isms that we're familiar with, has to do with power and control. And that comes from the egotism. As we become more egotistical and arrogant, human beings seek to control others more and more. Not that we haven't been doing it for millions of years, but I'm talking on this in this world. But I'm talking about it becoming almost like a disease now. And so it's a standard practice that there are those that want power and control and they get it. And those who either don't want it or can't develop enough of it because they aren't creative, they aren't destructive enough in their creativity to be able to choose to do it. So the ultimate goal of the progressive is to decide what's best for others, even though it ultimately destroys the freedom of others and the creation of others, worse than anything that they claim that they're trying to free people from, be it religion or otherwise, and it makes people enslaved. But it does so to the benefit of those who are socialists or communists or what we just call different kinds of progressivists. And so all of this is a part of the rejection of God, going back to that concept. It starts with that. As a matter of fact, communists say that God is the opiate, religion is the opiate of the people, and obviously God is a non-existent entity and irrelevant. Socialists do not, by and large, accept that communistic position, but what they say is that the state and the rights of the state are superior to the rights of people and of God. Well, if you put something above God, then God isn't God. I don't care if it's the state or if it's the antenna on your roof or if it's the spaceship out there. It doesn't matter, or aliens in the spaceship. If those are superior to God, God is no longer God, and you have destroyed what God might be. Because God has to be definitive sort, God needs to be the being that created all. And if that isn't the definition you're applying to God, then you're just doing a sleight of hand. It's not like, well, gee, I still believe in God. It's just not the God you believe. My God is kind of like on the sidelines, and if you pray to it once in a while, something good might happen, but ultimately it's the state that, if you're a socialist, it's a state that's going to either help you or not help you in the long run, and it's you got to depend upon that. You can't depend upon God. I mean, look, God only does miracles once in a while. The state is with you every day. It's the big parent. Well, what happens when you go back to parental understanding in terms of spiritual development? You're back to the first several dozen lifetimes. And so progressives are not progressive. They are morally and ethically regressive, severely regressive, as they become more progressive. They're just like the young souls, except the young souls are moving forward and they're moving backwards. Woo! how is that? Well, it's based upon everything I just explained, of course. But so this is strange, because these people who are so well-educated sometimes score high on intelligence tests, oftentimes are professionals and have lots of power and money and control over others and have strong political biases and ways of doing things and on and on and on, are going backwards in their spiritual development and are actually becoming less developed as a human being, not more so. Wow. So they call themselves humanists, but they're actually anti-humanists. They are becoming mechanical robots. They don't realize it. The robotic nature of people who are so egotistical and arrogant can be seen in their mannerisms and some of the things they do in their life. But it's most important to recognize in terms of the general thought process. Now, what is that thought process? It has to do with what is known as limitation and reduction of large concepts into isms and we'll call logic rather than, because logic is a test of the lower mind of something and whether various thought forms support a particular concept, but not of the concept itself. It doesn't test the concept in total. And so they are non-conceptual in their understanding in a big sense. They may understand small concepts, they're not big ones. And they are mostly logical, but without big concepts of understanding. And that's what breeds the egotism and arrogance and the odd behaviors that are anti-humanistic. Wow. I know this sounds terrible, and it looks like I'm, oh, you're just after those poor folks. I'm not after anybody. If I don't explain these things, people may see it but not understand it. My job is to reveal the truth of things as I understand it and get people to test it out and see if it's true or not. I mean, some of what I just said, you don't even have to go test. You could just think about all the people you know in your life and who are the ones that are most likely progressive or even claim to be, and then see how they think. And do they actually do the things I say or not? If they don't do the things I said, then I must be wrong. And if they do, well, listen more. Because there's more to understand about this problem. Okay, again, that's about 15%. It's not everybody. And we shouldn't think that the whole world is just filled with these people who are really doomed. Right now, it is mostly our government, though, here in the United States and some other countries. And that's very dangerous. Because these folks, when they get into positions of power and apply their logic, and they're really not spiritual at all, they're anti-spiritual, they're anti-soul, they're anti-God, then you have a real serious open door to evil. And if one or more of them, be they the head of the IRS or the president of the United States or whatever, gets into a really high position of power, you've got a serious problem if they're evil, because then there are no ways to stop it. We don't have a system, even our Constitution, is not able to dictate and tell us what's evil. It's up to each person to be able to understand that, but evil is so well hidden by so many layers of illusion that we live in, that only a very few people can see it. And that's a big problem, because the majority of people elect all the folks that we're talking about, or eventually they come in through that door. And if the majority of people are not seeing evil, we're in big trouble, because then evil has the upper hand in getting elected and having power over other people. And that's the sort of thing we're facing right now. Now, does that mean there's no way out of this? No. The way out of it is for people to become more loving of life. That's the first stage. And as they become more loving of life, the understanding that comes from that, especially if they can get those centers to balance, the three heart chakras to balance to some degree, the chances of them agreeing with or going along with a highly toxic evil system is not high. Why not? While they will not fully understand God, and nor will they be able to co-create with God unless they become more creative, at least they won't allow this evil system to destroy other people and even the rights of other people, because they can see that that's not loving life. And they will intervene usually. So it triggers things, but it takes a lot of time. Generally speaking, the ratio is on an order of 10 to 1. So let me give you an example of that. What would take someone, let's say a year, if they're co-creative with God, to recognize that a whole bunch of folks are evil and they're doing bad things, etc. If they aren't co-creative with God, it's going to take them 10 years to reach the same point. Now, it's something like that. I'm not going to guarantee it's always 10 to 1 or anything. But my noticing of this situation falls in that general ballpark. Now, some people like sevens a lot, and I might say it's sevens. I'll go along with that if you want. The problem is the same thing, though. Our system isn't designed for that, where the majority of people don't come to an understanding about the people they're electing for 10 years or 7 years or whatever you want to buy it later, because that's too late. It just doesn't work. And so that's where our problem lies, is that we just don't have that. And so love of life alone, even if you've got that part of the equation down, and you're good for it, you're good to go for it, you're past 300 lifetimes, a lot of people in the United States are there, it just takes so long for them to come to the realization, hey, we don't have any rights anymore. They're listening into every conversation. That people are coming in my door and knocking and telling me they're going to do this or that. I've got to go through 5 different audits, and the next thing I know, I got no money, no time, no nothing. All because I went to a meeting of people that said they want to be free. Okay. So you got to look at it from this standpoint, that it is the ability to, in the process of creating, recognize that the first thing that evil does is it destroys creation. It doesn't destroy the love part for many, many years later. It goes after the ability to be creative of anything that's enlightening. And so the people who are the most creative in society are the ones that are shut down first by an evil system. And that's where you got to protect the system. And there are no protections right now. About 10, 12 changes in the amendments to our Constitution would fix that. Oh, God, to get one amendment passed could take dozens of years. And 10? I don't know. And right now, the Constitution of the United States does not have adequate protections for that sort of thing. And it's because the people who created it were brilliant second and third level initiates, for the most part. They were brilliant people. They came up with one heck of a document. But they themselves only understood evil to a certain level, and they couldn't reach far enough into the future to recognize how evil would grow in these more monastic or mental ways, and the propaganda and the abuses that would take place in the use of a constitution they came up with, they couldn't conceive. And the technologies, of course, has also led us to this impasse. So we are in difficult times here in the United States. Now, this is going on not just here. If you live in another country, you're probably in worse shape than what I'm saying, because the Constitution of the United States is one of the best in the world. Wherever you are at, it's probably worse than what I'm saying. And so this is even more of a problem. Much more. Okay, so how do we deal with this? How do we get to the point for the love of life and God that we're going to move ahead and make a difference? Well, our plan is not based upon what the Constitution of the United States is, which is that it's a democracy with a majority of the people determining it, with the minorities protected supposedly within the Constitution. That's not the system that Earth is presently working under in a spiritual sense. What is the system? The system is called initiation. And initiation is totally different than anything that deals with the stuff I've just been talking about for exactly this reason. It has to overcome evil. And evil you cannot depend upon the masses, majority of people, to be able to defeat. They won't. Evil will always defeat the majority of people when it deals with the mental side of existence. At the astral level, people react astrally, and evil can get into a lot of trouble when it just fights astrally, because after a few years to a few decades, it's gone. And we just wipe out. People get angry and they go after it. But at a mental level, it doesn't work that way anymore. So the being that created Earth and others decided that we had to, since we're here to fight mental evil and to do so at a very accelerated rate, because the mental evil was going to be allowed to accelerate very quickly by developing humanity fast. So this is all a setup. And it had to do with the karma of the earlier planet that Earth came from. And since it had this karma, it was a good place to choose this plan, it seems. The plan is to forget about the majority and go with a super small minority. Deal with only the few. And I'm talking about relatively few, and it's not that small of a number, but it's in the millions and not billions, and we have billions of people. And it's like, it's between 10 and 12, 14 million people, really, is what we're talking about, who are going to be the folks who are going to do most of the fighting against evil. How are they going to do that? Well, here's the plan, and I'll try to explain it to you in terms of love of life and God, but we'll start off with just the basics. The basics of the plan are the following. That since you can't get the majority to respond fast enough before evil just inundates them through the mental part of existence, and it changes everything to the point where nobody has any power or control over anything, you have a select number, in this case, a few million people who are awake enough and who are spiritual disciples here in the United States. I'll give you an example in the U.S. And these people need to reach a place called the pledged to accepted stage and become highly creative. Now, when they become highly creative, one person is worth 1,000, maybe 10,000. People who are not very creative. And so you have, you're equalizing the number problem through creation. And they have to be creative using all three bodies, and they have to do so in a somewhat, we'll call it conscious way, and through something called spiritual discipline. And they have to co-create with God and not just help to love life and create more of life. And only people at the pledged and beyond stage, working through and with others, can do this today. They can't do it alone anymore. They could have done it before the last century alone and part of the past century, but somewhat. But now, today, it's not possible. They have to work together. And they, when you do this, they become super creative if they function and they do their spiritual disciplines correctly. And then they can not only see evil, they can defeat it. Now, you could say, well, how can one person act like 10,000, defeat evil, when you said that the 10,000 are going to lose? Because creation is super fast. Remember, creation puts you back into the one-year thing instead of the 10-year thing or the 7-year thing or whatever, you don't buy it. And so within a short time, if you're creative, you can unravel the evil. And that's the plan that was put in place at the beginning of the development of humanity on Earth 60 million years ago. So it's just amazing that they knew that all this is going to transpire. Remember, it's like they figured this whole stuff out a long time ago. They being all the beings that were involved in the creation of our world, which is God, in a sense, because they're representatives, so to speak. And they came up with this was the only way it was going to, the Earth would survive. It wouldn't survive if you went the other direction, which most planets go, which is, yeah, you wait till a majority of the people are here and there and got it all together and everybody becomes nice, hunky-dory, you know, kumbayas and doing the hugging and the loving and everything is terrific. And the planet is just so balanced already. It took an extra 10 or 20 million years, but we got it done, and isn't it wonderful? And evil never gets a chance because it's slow and methodical. That's not Earth. Just not Earth. And evil doesn't hit those planets because the development is slow enough so that people will stay equal to or ahead of evil. Here, it is not that way. Okay, so here we not only have to love life, and I do impress upon you that that is the first stage. If you're not loving life, you got to work on that one. But here you also have to have a love of God, and that only comes from a creation level that is more of all of life and God and against evil all balanced together. And it can't be for just love of humanity. Now, let me tell you something. I'm going to tell you, this is a personal, like, reflection, okay? I've been struggling with not loving humanity so much and balancing that with not only the love of all lower life, but the love of kingdoms beyond the human kingdom and the love of God by co-creating with God and recognizing the greatness that God in all the higher kingdoms, as well as that which is done by spiritual people in the human kingdom, and by all lower life, including group souls of lower life and solar angels of lower life, all of that working together, balancing all that so that I don't have an accentuation of love of humanity. Because the tendency is, when you reach a certain point in initiation, to want to try to save everybody, and especially human beings, because that's, after all, a big deal. But that has to be tempered with a greater love of God in general, because otherwise the possibility is that you can lose the perspective of loving God and trying to be a fanatical savior of some people. And there's a fine balance in doing this. It is not easy, as I stated. It is actually extremely difficult to achieve this. It's the hardest thing that probably a human being can do in the face of all the disasters and terrible things that happen to people who are trying to do this balance, because evil is after you, like all get out because they want to get rid of you because you're dangerous. But in addition, even if there were no evil, it would still be a very difficult thing because it requires the balanced unification of the senses. When you're creative, you don't want to balance the senses. Well, you may want to on an intellectual level, but from the perspective of the creation, you sometimes get so involved in the creation, oh, so my center isn't balanced today, I'll go do this or this other thing this other way. That's not good. It happens. It happens all the time. But you need to actually balance it. And it's really difficult because it means slowing up sometimes. It means doing things that seem to even others who may condemn you for it to be, well, why are you wasting your time with that? See, it is a problem of perspective, not just of the person doing it, but all those that may be serving with them and people who obviously don't serve with them, but may have some power or control or input into who they are and what they're doing. It's a very complex subject. Can't explain it all. I just wanted to mention that on my level, I call it personal. It isn't personal love, but it's spiritual. I'm going through some of that myself. And I can tell you that it's required of everybody eventually before they can go on to the next kingdom. You can't do it unless you get this thing down pat. It's got to be perfect. How hard it is to do? Well, it doesn't involve just yourself. It involves people that you co-serve with, that usually are students, at least a lot of them are, and that also have an incredible impact on even the senses that the person trying to do the balancing is doing. So in other words, you may get it perfectly balanced, and then these folks that you're working with say, oh, well, I think I'll be selfish today and do something goofy. Who cares? Well, it screws up the person who's trying to get everything balanced, or anybody else around them that's trying to balance it. So everybody's balance goes to hell, and there you go. So this is a really, really difficult problem. And anyone who's not co-creating, that's a big problem. Because creation is the answer to the solution. And the co-create, and the people who are afraid of creation always lead into the darkness and away from it. And it's a constant conflict. All right. Well, what can you do about it? Well, the first thing you do is you're tolerant. You got to be tolerant because it's going to keep happening over and over again. How long does it happen? It's usually for more than one lifetime. So most people don't end up going through the process in one lifetime because these other things are tripwires. They prevent that from going on. How do you get from loving of life to finally loving God? Well, in order to love God, you've got to get to the enlightenment beyond the three bodies. We talked today, you know, so far, well, I made it simple, I think, I hope, about these three bodies humans have, and you get them all together, and your senses are joined, and all sorts of stuff. But while you're doing that, you've got to build a whole new body called the intuitional or Buddha body, and you do it from scratch. Unlike the other bodies, I was actually going to do a show just on this, but I'm not going to. It's too complicated, and most people go, oh, what is he talking about? But I will tell you this. In order, like, we have these bodies. They're basically created by a process that has to do with our souls and our solar angel. And it's almost like following a script, so to speak, because how much we create in it is minimal until the very end. But eventually you have to be the main creator. And when that happens, the next body that we get is fully 100% created by us. And the next body is called the Buddha body, the intuitional body. It's 100, as is anybody after that, by the way. It's 100% created. All the senses in the Buddha body are created by us creating and serving God. You can't get anywhere with the Buddha body by, oh, I'll read this book. I'll do what my teacher said. I'll follow what everybody else is doing. I'll be a perfect little good disciple or do this or that. Nothing. No intuition, no Buddha body. You got to create it yourself. All right. That's only one of the tenets about the Buddha plane and everything else. I was going to do a show just about the whole intuitional realm, but I don't know if people really need to know about that or really want to know about it. You know, like, well, so what? Well, I'm not going to get there for 100 lifetimes, so forget it. But I think it's an interesting subject, not for today, though. Okay, so you got to create this body yourself. That's the same as saying you got to create God. You see what I'm talking about. Now, I'll tell you something else. The next body after the human body is not considered the physical part of the universe. The cosmic physical part of the universe is where the three human bodies are. The next part is called the cosmic etheric part. The etheric is really the development or creation of everything that's in the physical. And so it's a weird context to understand it that way. And in esoteric terms, people talk about it that way, but they don't know what it really means. Of course, it means what I'm explaining tonight, but how do you mean that? Okay. So we need to effortlessly serve. Now, what is effortless service? It means that instead of using up energy, we join together energy together to become fully intelligent activity, which means the energy moves back into space, and the space joins at events, and it takes no time to do anything, and that makes things effortless, because no energy is expended, no time is used up or separated from space, and things are done through a thing called intelligent interaction. But intelligent means perfectly intelligent. It doesn't mean just, well, there's a little bit of intelligence. No, it means it's perfectly intelligent. There is no waste of any time or energy, if you want to use that terminology. It's not completely accurate to say it that way, but it's close enough so people may better understand it. The amazing part of this whole equation now is that the process of spiritual discipleship in the long run is eventually becoming effortlessly a server. And because of that, I created a thing with other people. We worked on it called synthetic yoga. It was all based upon that principle. Problem is that it's intolerant to failure. And remember, when you create, you fail if you're human. So it becomes a quagmire. First, you have to discipline yourself so that the failure rates diminish. Otherwise, the mental body becomes damaged. And that's the problem with that kind of yoga. If you are spiritually disciplined and you've gotten past a certain point of spiritual discipline, then you can actually use that kind of system, and it is very effective. Could save lifetimes of, we'll say, trying to spiritually develop yourself. But we're not quite there because too many people are very far from doing much spiritual discipline, particularly on their astral and mental bodies. And the mental body is extremely so, and the astral is pretty high too. So it's all contingent upon, we'll say, significant levels of spiritual discipline. And human beings right now are only so-so in that whole process. The initiatory process that I talk about as being the savior of the planet is also the problem. Because it requires this thing called spiritual discipline, and most people are barely mundanely disciplined, much less spiritually disciplined. Now, what does spiritual discipline mean? It means the ability to put spirit first in the decisions of all elements of interaction. Why do people fail that? Because in order to achieve it, not only do you have to be little self forgetful, you have to be higher self expressive, meaning you have to be creative. The higher self is the creative engine of us. And so a lot of people get into it and they say, well, I'm just going to sacrifice my lower self and that'll be fine. You know, no, it doesn't work. You can't just say, well, I'm not going to do anything, but I won't do anything that's selfish. Because that is still selfish. The only way out of it is to become the creative higher self. And that's where people have the trouble. Becoming a higher self is a huge task. It means opening up the channels. It means doing all the things that I have already said. And it requires a lot of elements of spiritual discipline that so many people have so much trouble with these days. Can it be done? Without question. Can it be done best in a spiritual group? It's almost a necessity these days. It used to be you had the option, but not any longer. It's just too hard because we've become so hardened and so egotistical. Recently, the third ray started to become less, we'll say, reinforced within us, our throat chakras, that means, are not reinforced so much from the thought of beings from other worlds. And so the result is that now we're becoming more brittle, more, we'll call it, crystallized in the use of our throat chakras. That has a lot to do with how we communicate with each other. Intelligent interaction requires high levels of communication, and that's being thwarted by crystallization in a number of people who are selfish. It's making it more difficult, not less, and it's happening as I speak. I mean, we've already gone past the peak of development of the third wave, which was last year. And now we're in the decline while it's crystallizing. Whoa. That's a tough problem, and some people are not reacting well to it, I can tell you that. All right. So, very quickly, I'll tell you what we need to do for love of life and God in general that solves as much as I can in 10 minutes of the equation that we're dealing with. The very first thing is, assuming that some people are thinking about or are spiritually disciplining themselves, you need to get input from other people. Don't sit around and masturbate about your spiritual discipline. It'll get you nowhere, and it leads to the dark side. Because rejection of God is continually being reinforced by too many events and people and things around us. You've got to have input from other people on a regular basis. and it is up to each individual to get it. Don't think, well, I'll just sit here and wait for somebody to come in magically and help me. It is incumbent upon a person who's spiritually disciplining themselves to be the creator of their own discipline and not to be waiting for someone to take them by the hand and say, now do this, now do that, because it defeats spiritual discipline. It is opposed to the very nature of what you're trying to do. So don't do that. And then the next step is to think about what it means to love creation. Because God is a creator. You can't love God if you aren't a creator too. You can't do it. You can only do it until you start to spiritually discipline yourself. Then you've got to become a co-creator. There is no way around. So, but you have to see this yourself. You have to experiment with it in your own thought process. You have to try to be God, from God's perspective, why is God doing this? Because God wants all life to experience the wonder of being God, not the wonder of being a servant of God or a pawn of God or a puppet of God. Because then God would not be God. God would be evil, as we define it. Next thing. If you're going to go down this road, which I hope you are, in your love for life, each point in loving life must become more and more balanced. That means you can't love some parts of life and not others. You can't say, well, I like or dislike this part, and I love that part, and I hate the rest of it. You can't. Loving life has to do in understanding how life itself needs to be better balanced. And those things that you dislike about life are ways that you can create changes in it so it will be the kind of life that you can love. You can't just ignore it and say, oh, well, yeah, somebody else created that, and I'm not going to bother myself with it. So, yeah, leave it alone. You know, it's just mosquitoes. Hey, mosquitoes. Now, you can change mosquitoes. You can change anything. Everything is in a creative mode. And each of us must eventually see ourselves as being part of how life can be more loving and itself become more creative and eventually become human. And then beyond that, everything is in a progressive place, but not progressive, right? Because progressivism is anti-progressive. It's weird. Some of these words and some of the things we think about counterintuitive to our very nature. All right. Finally, egotism. If you can't deal with egotism, you can't change the problems I'm talking about, because egotism is the defense to becoming non-creative. It's the very nature of the problem. So you have to develop humility. If you can't develop humility, you will fail in this process. Now, humility is not just saying, well, I'll say what he said, I read it in his book. Oh, I must be wrong, because I hear something different than what I'm thinking. I'll just say it. I'll write it for you. No, you have to have it first in your heart, then in your mind. No, if I hear something that isn't me, I'm going to change it, allow it to be that it's really, I easily could be mistaken here. Let me hear the right thing. And if I can't hear it, then I'll open up the dialogue, but I won't force that I'm right and the other person's wrong. I will instead still remain in a humble position. If you can't do that, you won't gain. And you can't play the game. You can't make it like, oh yeah, well, I'm really doing it, but I'm not. No. This has to be something you can really do. As you become more humble, the egotism starts to break away. And especially if you have egotism with high levels of lack of love, that's called arrogance, then you gotta really be humble and at the same time as empathic as possible. And some people have significant levels of egotism. It depends on them. They're probably not listening tonight, but there might be a few out there. Okay, so the object here is to develop a level of truth in your mind that goes beyond the level of knowledge. You have to use consciousness to create rather than knowledge. Every time you say, so-and-so says, or I read, or I heard, you're egotistical. Because you didn't say, I created this idea and thought process from the knowledge I had, but there's no knowledge that really explains it. This is what I've come up with, and I think it might be right, but it's certainly worth a test. Would you help me in the test? That's good. You say that, and you mean it, you're on the right road. Go the other way, you're on the wrong road. To get to love of life and God, these are the formula. Now, they're not like, well, do these 10 things. No, they are just the concepts of how to live your life. Ultimately, you need to be aware of God in its totality, which is love of life, but it's also the co-creation with life, other life besides yourself, self, and to and with God. Then you see yourself and God not being separate, and not and God is not something that just has bad things happen to good people. God gives freedom to people and freedom to all life, and some of that freedom allows that life to destroy itself. Because that's the way it is. When bad things happen to good people, it's because there are bad people or other things in the universe that are affected by bad people, usually, that cause bad things to happen to good people. That's how it works. And if it didn't work that way, God would not be God. All right. Now, I know it sounds like I've been on some kind of trip. Oh, man, did he cover all that? And it sounds like I'm preaching, maybe. I'm not preaching. I'm trying to help people to greater understand the areas where there is weakness in all of us. Me too. Yeah, I'm going through parts of what I'm talking about. And not quite at the same level as each part of what I've said, but certainly in my own way I'm doing it. And everybody else I know that's a human being is having something to do with this stuff tonight. Really. So don't think at all, well, there's so many other people who are doing so much better. Well, I don't know anybody that's doing, like, great. I know some people that are doing good. The people who are doing great sometimes are not that visible. It's hard. Because to see them, you need to be co-creating with them. Otherwise, you don't even know who they are. Or if you do, you don't know really what they're about. That's kind of like the opposite side of the evil thing, right? It goes both directions. So it's difficult to find the people who are really doing a lot of what I've talked to you about tonight. I hope this has all made sense to you. There's a huge amount that could be covered, but I think tonight's show at least puts us on the right road. It gives a lot of things to think about. And it certainly explains what the show title is, I hope. For Love of Life and God. If you've got that, and you really know what that title means, I think the show has done its job. And if you could explain it to other people, it really has. So I hope you can tell other people about parts about what you heard tonight. And of course, you have that, what I said at the beginning. You can go back and re-listen to anything you want to give you some perspective or better understanding about something that might be a little hazy. And if it still isn't there, contact me. I am available. And I will try to communicate. Email is difficult for me because it usually takes too much time to explain the things that people want to talk to me about. Picking up the phone is better, but then you got to make an appointment and we'll talk with you. That's really the better way because it's an interaction. Well, we're really out of time. And there's supposed to be, and I think there is another show, you might want to listen to it right after this one. And until next week, this has been Niles McFlower for Why Life Is.